Hello and welcome to Politics and Science. I'm your host, John Barkhausen. Today I'm featuring an interview with Dr. Chris Busby. It was recorded on April 1st, 2011. Dr. Busby is the Scientific Secretary of the European Committee on Radiation Risk, and since the interview he's come out with a forecast for the health damage that's being done at Fukushima. Within the 200 kilometers contamination zone, he's forecasting 417,000 cancers, additional cancers, within that zone during the next 50 years until 2061. Dr. Busby developed his knowledge in the areas of radiation biology and epidemiology and presently heads a company called Green Audit, does research in the field of low-level radiation and health. He disagrees rather profoundly with the current mainstream science that's put out by the United Nations. In this interview, I've asked him about that. There was recently a news show featuring George Monbiot debating Helen Caldicott, and he addresses some of the issues of the disagreements that those two had with each other. So here is Dr. Chris Busby. This is a rather short show. It's only about 35 minutes. So I thought the most important thing to do today was to try to answer some of the things we're hearing in the press. We just heard a debate on a news show that we have here in the U.S. called Democracy Now!, and it featured George Monbiot. Thank you. It's French.
Monbiot.
And talking to Helen Caldicott.
And yeah, sure. Okay. I know both of them.
And the essential debate boiled down to the fact that she basically didn't believe the UN UNSEER report about the effects of radiation, and he does. He feels that only 43 people died at Chernobyl. This is George's position, Monbiot's position.
Yeah. Right.
And he was astounded that anyone could doubt the UN agency because, of course, that's mainstream science. And how could you possibly doubt the veracity of their report? And he accused Helen Caldicott of being a conspiracy theorist. And I was wondering if you could just respond to that.
Okay. Well, I'm responding to George Monbiot's belief in the accuracy of the results of the United Nations Chernobyl Forum, we have to say here, who are partly the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, but also the French nuclear industry and also the International Atomic Energy Agency. Monbiot believes that their report saying that only a few liquidators died and a few children developed thyroid cancer, he believes this because he is ignorant of the scientific literature. The scientific literature on the effects of the Chernobyl accident is massive. There are several hundred scientific papers that show that the effects of the Chernobyl accident are absolutely ghastly, absolutely enormous, not just from cancer, but from a whole range of other diseases. I give you two examples, which are difficult ones to argue against. One is from Sweden, where Martin Pondell and his colleagues from Linköping University looked at cancer risk in northern Sweden, in the small areas of northern Sweden, by radiation exposure to the contamination on the ground. And they found that for every 100 kilobecquerels of contamination by cesium, there was an 11% increase in cancer. 100 kilobecquerels is 1,000 disintegrations per second, 1,000 disintegrations per second for every square meter of ground. This was material that came from Chernobyl. This is an awful lot of radioactivity, 100,000 disintegrations per second. And most people would think that that might cause some harm to human beings living there, and of course they wouldn't be wrong. The other study, which I myself carried out, is an examination of reports from five or six different independent groups of increases in infant leukemia. That's leukemia in children who were in the womb at the time of the Chernobyl fallout. And this was published in two peer-reviewed journals. It was ignored by the United Nations, and Tondell's study was ignored by the United Nations. And in fact, the United Nations ignore anything that doesn't fit in with their risk model. And what we found was that in all of these different studies in Europe, from Greece, from Germany, from Scotland, from Wales, from England, we also had a study in Belarus, and we had a study in America too, in the United States, by Joe Mangano. All of these showed increases, statistically significant increases in childhood, in infant leukemia in the first year of life. And there were various relative risks, but they were all highly significant. And the only possible explanation for that is the Chernobyl accident, because these children were chosen because they were in the womb at the time of the Chernobyl accident. So these are just two studies I mentioned. But there are a whole range of studies that have been carried out by other groups, and most recently Alexei Yablokov has published a compendium of all these studies and review of all these studies, which was published under the auspices of the New York Academy of Sciences. So the problem is with Monbiot is that he doesn't know anything. And that is the problem with most of these people that I see talking about the Fukushima accident, is they themselves don't seem to know anything. They don't look at the research themselves. They don't do the research themselves. All they do is they listen to authorities.
I mean, it's obvious that he doesn't know what you're saying to be true.
No, he does know what I'm saying to be true. He does know what I'm saying. Because about 4 years ago, I talked to George. He got in touch with me, and he asked me about this a long time ago when he was first thinking about examining the idea of nuclear energy. And he asked me to provide a report for him and to talk to him about it, which I did. And I provided the report, references, everything. So the fact is, he's just ignored this.
I see. It's odd. Helen Caldicott asked him if he was aware of the Chernobyl report that you're referring to, Chernobyl, the consequences of the catastrophe for people and the environment, by Alexei Yablokov. And he said, yes, he had a copy, and he hadn't read it all, but he'd read most of it. So, but I think he feels like a lot of people do, and I'm not sure what the reason is for this, that because it's outside of what he considers to be the mainstream, which in his case, I guess anything UN is mainstream, that he feels like to accept those results, which are in contradiction with the UN report, UN saying, you know, 43 to 9,000 people were affected, and the Chernobyl report by Yablokov saying over a million people have died. He says to accept that is it the equivalent of believing the global warming deniers, which he calls fringe science as well.
Well, I wouldn't like to comment on the global warming deniers. The fact is that the United Nations are not themselves experts. What they do is they review other studies, and they cherry-pick the studies which support their position, and they ignore the studies which don't support their position. Mm. And in fact, the number of scientists, or I say scientists, but the number of individuals, they're really not scientists. They are scientific civil servants, really. They don't do any research themselves. If you look up the individuals involved in these reports, they are not hands-on scientists like Yablokov and the people that he reports. They are just people who sit behind desks and look at bits of paper, and then they take from those bits of paper what they believe supports their position, and ignore what they don't believe supports their position. And so if that's a conspiracy theory, then that is what I hold, what I believe. You know, I don't know if it's a conspiracy, but it certainly has to do with the culture of the people associated with these kinds of reviews.
All right. Just this morning on a local station here, we heard somebody named Patrick Moore, who said he was formerly of Greenpeace, and he is now on the air claiming that coal and even hydro are way more dangerous than nuclear. He claimed he had an irrational fear of nuclear power because environmentalists tend to lump nuclear power with nuclear weapons, and that he's now recovered from this paranoia, and he sees, like George Monbiot, he sees nuclear power as the answer to our global warming crisis and power needs. And What do you make of this remarkable wave of people who look at the disaster in Fukushima and see it as somehow a sign that nuclear power is the answer at the same time that it's melting down and poisoning the environment?
Well, I think we have to go back to Kierkegaard for that. We go back to this philosopher who was concerned about belief He is the belief philosopher. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he decided and wrote about was that the more insane a proposition is, the more strongly people hold the belief in it. Hmm. And so as the assault on their belief system becomes more and more violent, the more they have to hold to the belief system that they have, because otherwise they would be in some way cancelling out their identity. And people's identity is very, you know, is perhaps the strongest drive of all, stronger than eating, stronger than sex. You look in the mirror, you say, who am I? If you're the person who has written extensively about how great nuclear power is, and suddenly something comes along which shows you that it isn't, what you have to do is you have to shout even louder into your own ears to support it. And I think this is what's happening. It's what the psychologists call denial, I think, nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose the same claim could be thrown back at you, that as they say that nuclear power is the answer. You're saying that radiation causes extensive disease in humans and in the rest of the environment. What's your basis for saying that?
My basis is the research. I've spent 20 years doing research on this issue. I've done epidemiological research on this issue. I've done cell biology. I've done theoretical work. I've done an enormous amount of work. I've devoted an enormous and rather too much of my life, I have to say, part of my life to all of this, when I would have much rather been sitting on the beach with my girlfriend and a bottle of wine. Mm. And I don't get very much money out of this, I have to say, either. So it's not something that I do for money. I do it because of the children. I do it because I got interested in it and I find it quite fascinating. But I am a researcher. And so when I say these things, they come from a basis in scientific research and an enormous amount of this. Whereas these people who talk about these things, they actually have no basis whatever except kind of blind belief in authority.
One thing I've noticed, Dr. Chris Busby, is that all of these ill effects that are happening in Chernobyl, they say that there was a thyroid problem in Chernobyl, but there's a lot of other diseases that are happening that the official studies at the UN don't recognize as being caused by radiation. And the same thing happens at Three Mile Island in the United States. And they have an explanation for these diseases, and that's stress from fear of radiation, which seems very odd to me, that even though there's a great increase in disease, they don't blame it on the actual radiation, they blame it on the fear of it.
Well, yes, Well, of course they're wrong, and you can see that there's going to be the same thing will happen at Fukushima. However, the main point that you can make, that I can make, is this, is that nobody ever got cancer from radiophobia. Mm-hmm. And there is enormous evidence that animals and fish and plants are becoming mutated as a result of the radiation from Chernobyl. There's lots of scientific reports, research reports that show this. For example, swallows, long time ago, were shown to have little white blotches on their skin, on their plumage, as a result of the radiation from Chernobyl. We know that bank voles, which have been studied extensively, have developed what's called genomic instability. And 22 generations of these animals have got this genomic instability, so it makes them particularly responsive to radiation, rather more responsive than ones who hadn't been irradiated. And their genetic, there are a lot of chromosome damage tests that have been done. There was an interesting chromosome test, the DNA test, that was done in Israel, where they looked at the liquidators' children who were born after the accident compared with the children who were born before the accident, and showed a 7 times increase in genetic damage there. You don't get that from radiophobia. You can't alter your genes because you're frightened of radioactivity.
So I wanted you to explain a little bit. They make very light of low-dose radiation. They say, of course, the Fukushima accident, some people will die from that because of the high doses, but low-dose radiation is often dismissed as having any effect at all on people. In fact, some people claim that it's even stimulating to the immune system and beneficial.
The problem is the concept of dose. It's now generally recognized that you cannot use this concept of dose. So the idea of low dose, high dose, this dose, that dose, is rather like saying all poisons are the same. It's okay. Rather like saying that I can have 1 gram of salt or 1 gram of sodium iodide or 1 gram of sodium cyanide, and because it's 1 gram and that's the dose, they'll all have the same effect. And for internal radiation, of course, that isn't the same, that the effect isn't the same. And the reason for that is because dose is energy per unit mass. So you can sit in front of a fire and warm yourself and get so many joules per kilogram, energy per unit mass, or you could reach into the fire and eat a hot coal, and that would also give you the same energy per unit mass. It would be a lot more energy, but it would all be in one place. And so there are a number of ways in which internal radiation can't be modeled in terms of dose. And in fact, the United Nations, if you like to call their risk model the ICRP risk model, International Commission on Radiological Protection, they have conceded this. I had an interview with their scientific secretary just after he had resigned, and this was in April 2009 in Stockholm. And he conceded, and it's all on video. So if you go to Vimeo.com and you type in Busby and Valentin, his name was Jack Valentin, you can watch the whole video where he concedes that the ICRP risk model cannot be used for internal radiation exposures. It cannot be used for accidents like Fukushima and Chernobyl. And he also concedes that now that he's no longer the scientific secretary, that the United Nations were wrong in not addressing all of the evidence that came out of Chernobyl. So he concedes all of these things, and it's all there on the internet on video, so you can watch him say it. So the problem then is that these internal radionuclides, they can cause a lot of energy in one place, and we call those things hot particles, or they can bind to DNA. So they have chemical affinity for DNA. Examples are barium-140, strontium-90, uranium, all of the uranium sub, they bind to DNA very strongly. And so when they deliver their energy, it's not just anywhere into the body, which is mostly concerned made of water. They deliver it directly into the DNA, and therefore they cause the damage at a much, much higher rate than you would expect from their dose. So saying that the low dose is very low and is not the same as flying to across the Atlantic or whatever other analogy that is used is missing the point that you cannot use dose for internal radionuclides. You can for some of them, but you can't for some of them. And those are the ones that are really dangerous, the uranium, the strontium-90, and various other ones that also have this affinity for DNA.
So your main point as the scientific secretary of the European Committee on Radiation Risk is that the whole dose risk model is wrong, that's being used by mainstream science right now.
Yes, it's wrong. And this has actually been the probably the largest public health scandal in human history. As a result of this, probably more than 60 million people have died unnecessarily because of this business of dose and external and internal radiation.
I was going to ask, what would be the ramifications if your risk model was adopted?
If our risk model was adopted,
yeah,
then it would give the correct answer to the question, how many people will die following an internal exposure? If you take this, if you take the situation of Tondell and the studies in northern Sweden, this is a huge study of the whole population of northern Sweden over about 10 years. Massive statistical significance. Been published
in relation to Chernobyl.
Yeah. Okay. And they know what the doses are. They know what the concentrations on the ground are. You can work out the doses and so on. And what you find is that the ECRR risk model exactly predicted what Tondell would find. And the risk model was written in 2003 before Tondell's paper came out. And where you look at Chernobyl, where you look at the Marshall Islands, where you look at the test veterans, where you look at all these other situations where you get internal exposure, what you find is that the ECRR risk model gives you the right answer. And I take it into court, because I do a lot of work as expert witness now, and I take this book, the Blue Book now, the 2010 book, I take it into court. I talk to the jury and I talk to the judge, or I put it forward in my research, in my expert evidence, and usually, well, in fact, nearly always, we win. Mm-hmm. We win. Usually they don't allow it to get to court. They just settle out of court. So I've done probably 30 cases in which they've settled out of court or just packed it up, because they don't want to have to go into court to allow that as a precedent, because then all of the dominoes will go down, and then there will be such a huge attack on the nuclear industry that they would be finished. Because so many people have died as a result of this.
How many people did you say again have died according to this risk model?
Between 1952 and about, I think, 1994 was when we did the cutoff, because that's when the data cut off. It's just about 65 million cancer deaths.
Jeez.
Globally, this is.
Yes. And
Where can you see those? You want to know, you know, where are they? Well, I mean, you only have to look around you. You only have to think about your own family. You only have to think about your dogs and cats. But after about the biggest injection of radionuclides into the atmosphere was in between 1959 and 1963 with the weapons fallout. Mm-hmm. And then about 10, 15 years after that, the cancer rate started to rise, and they went up and up and up and up and up. And in the northern hemisphere, you're talking about a 30% rise in cancer. And you've only got to multiply the population of the northern hemisphere by the cancer risk by 30% that you get your 60 million. Everybody's dying of cancer now.
But Chris, we're winning the war on cancer. You forget.
Of course we are.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And oh, look, there's a pig. Woo, there it goes.
Hey, I don't believe you. And I don't suppose it's possible to attribute which particles came from where, but do you have any estimate of what the damaged nuclear power itself is doing, not when there's a disaster like this, but just in the regular course
just generally.
Of events?
There are two types of problems with nuclear power. The first is the problem from reprocessing plants, which is the worst problem. So you have various plants where they do the fueling or the reprocessing of the fuel and so on, and those pump out all sorts of radionuclides, usually to the sea. So I've studied Sellafield in the United Kingdom, which has pumped a lot of stuff into the sea, radionuclides. I mean, they're not allowed to do it now, but they still put some out in there. And what I was able to show was that in Wales, which is the country that I've studied, between 1974 and 1989, there were approximately 5,000 extra cancers in the coastal strip of Wales where this material ended up on the coast. And this is relevant to Fukushima, incidentally, because all this stuff is going into the sea and it's all going to end up on the coast. And then people will inhale this because it comes ashore as a consequence of sea-to-land transfer. The sea energy lifts these things up as particles and they drift ashore. And they fall out in about the first or second kilometer from the sea. So the risk is specifically associated with people living very close to the sea. And as I said, there were about 5,000 cancers, about 3,000 cancer deaths in that 16-year period in quite a small population, the Welsh population. And we found the same effect in Ireland on the other side of the Irish Sea too, but we didn't find it on the Atlantic coast or on the southern coast of Ireland. So it's definitely an Irish Sea effect due to the Sellafield radionuclides. The other thing is nuclear power stations themselves. What we found is that we've just studied breast cancer, prostate and lung cancer, stomach cancer. And what we found is that for breast cancer is the worst one. You get a doubling of breast cancer downwind of the nuclear power station. And I think that Jay Gould did an enormous study in the United States some years ago. He's dead now. And he found the same thing, about a doubling of breast cancer. And the reason is that the female breast is highly lymphatically perfused. So there are lots and lots of lymphatic channels inside the breast, and these can take the particles which are inhaled from the lung into the breast and cause irradiation of the type I was talking about, the sort of hot coal irradiation.
Mm-hmm. So that's downwind from nuclear power plants that are operating normally, not having accidents.
No, of course, having accidents you're going to get, you know, bad stuff. But I have to say there is a problem with big accidents, and that is this, that it's not a linear dose response. I mean, this is another thing the United Nations say, is that double the dose, double the risk, treble the risk. But it's not like that. What happens is that it goes up linearly at low doses, but then it drops again. And the reason it drops is because the cells start to get killed. And that is also true of people as well, and it's also true of babies. So if you put a baby in the womb and it's growing, and you start to poison it with small amounts of radionuclides, or anything actually, what will happen is when the baby is born, it will have various problems. But then, of course, if you keep increasing the concentration of what it is, eventually you'll kill the baby in the womb, and so the baby won't be born. But if you're just looking at the problems in children, you won't see that. All you'll see is that it will go down. So you could then say, you know, the bigger the dose, the less the effect. So if you give a really big dose, you don't get any leukemias in children. And the reason is because you kill them all in the womb.
They're still born.
Well, they're not born at all. They're miscarried.
I see. Yeah, Ernest Sternglass did a study in the United States, I believe, concerning the nuclear bombing, bomb test fallout that showed that probably up to 375,000 stillbursts were accounted for by...
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And Sternglass was what put me onto this originally, incidentally. Mm. He's my hero, Ernest. I mean, I met him long ago, and I've worked with him, and I've followed along behind him. Really, you know, he blazed the way, because he's that rare thing, a scientist and also an activist. You know, so he gets stuck in when he thinks there's something wrong and he's found it's wrong with his research. Then he gets stuck in and tries to change it. Too many scientists, they just get frightened at that point and they go and hide in their laboratories and don't say anything. So he's a hero of mine.
Yeah, he's a remarkable man. What about Alice Stewart, who did a lot of pioneering of the danger of medical radiation? That's had a huge effect, and I think that actually affected Ernest Sternglass's work, didn't she?
Yes, I think he used her calculations, which he did after the Second World War on childhood leukemia, in order to inform his own calculations, which he took to President Kennedy. And Sternglass told me it was his article that was sent to Kennedy that resulted in Kennedy's decision to halt the bomb testing and to sign the test ban. So in fact, Ernest has. They ought to put a statue up to Ernest. I mean, he's still alive, but they could still put a statue up to him. I followed along his work on infant mortality in England, and I went to see what it was caused by, and what I discovered was that the infant mortality in England was caused by strontium 90, and it was related to heart defects, mainly congenital heart defects. So I plotted the strontium 90 in milk in England and Wales against the congenital heart defects and got an absolute 100% correlation. Never seen anything like it. It's never been published. A lot of this stuff doesn't get published because, certainly in the past, if you sent it to the journals, they were all dominated by nuclear people, you know, in this area, and they would just throw it out. Nowadays it's getting a lot easier to get stuff published, but it's still not that easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people are operate under the assumption that peer-reviewed journals do a great job publishing both sides of, or many sides of every issue, and that there's a, you know, open discourse going on about scientific subjects. But from talking to scientists, which I do in the show, it sounds like that's not actually the case, that you pretty much have to be a member of the club.
Very much so, but it's getting easier. It's getting easier.
Good.
Unless you've got something that is very politically scary. I mean, I'll give you an example. Actually, I quite like to give you an example, which is a very recent study which I carried out with some colleagues in Iraq on the effects of uranium. What we did was we looked at the concentration of uranium in the hair of the mothers and fathers of children with congenital anomalies in Fallujah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big study. And what we did was, and as a result of these measurements, we found that there was a significant excess of uranium in the hair of these parents, you see. So we sent this along to the journal. But just about that same time, lots of people started writing to the journal and saying that Chris Busby's a nutcase, you know, and all his work is just informed by madness and, you know, and stuff like this. And the journal got so scared that they wrote to me and said, we're not going to even send it for review. You have to withdraw it. This was the journal editor somewhere in the United States, and he wrote to me and he said, I'm not going to consider this paper at all.
Which journal?
You know, normally they would send it to a referee, but this time they didn't even send it to the referee.
Which journal is that?
It's the it's the International Journal of Environment and Public Health.
And this is a study about the use of depleted uranium in Iraq?
Yeah. It's a study to try. You see, they did. We did do a study which received an enormous amount of interest on the internet, which was published by the same journal, the International Journal of Environment and Public Health. And I imagine that once they published that, they got an awful lot of flack from people saying, you know, this chap Busby's some sort of maverick, and you know, what were you doing publishing his paper and this and that. But anyway, they published it, and it had, I think, 16,000 downloads. It's up there on the internet because it's an internet journal. It's not a really great journal, you know, but I mean, it is a journal.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to follow this up because we had found, I think, huge increases in infant mortality, huge increases in cancer. We found, I think, a 38-fold increase in cancer, in leukemia, in men and women under the age of 35. Unheard of epidemiological result. Unheard of. And we were on Al Jazeera, and we were on Russia Today, and we were on the BBC, we were on everything, okay, talking about this. So it must have brought all of the anti-people out of the woodwork. And so when we went and sent our paper to them showing that the cause was the uranium in the hair of the parents, they said, we don't want to even look at this paper, take it away.
Now, we've been using depleted uranium as a weapon enhancer in many theaters at this point. We used it in Kosovo, is that right? And
yeah.
Used it in Iraq and Afghanistan now.
Used it in the Balkans, not just in Kosovo. You used it in the Balkans. It was used against the Serbs in Bosnia.
That's right. And so that sounds like that's going to have huge health consequences, not only for the citizens who live there, but, I mean, also the United States' soldiers who served in good faith over there. So that sounds like a pretty horrible outcome for basically something that's completely unnecessary.
No, it's not unnecessary. If you want to win a war, win the war. They've got a new weapon now which uses uranium not just as a penetrator, but uses it in order to increase the blast in some way, demolishing houses and so on. We're not quite sure how this is, but what we do know about it is that it was used in various theaters, and one of them was in Fallujah. And we have actually measured the stuff in the people, so we know that it was used there. And the thing about Fallujah is that our studies of Fallujah, in collaboration with the doctors at the Fallujah General Hospital, have shown levels of cancer and levels of congenital malformation that have never been reported in any study ever, even after Hiroshima. These are the highest levels of genetic damage that we have ever seen.
There's been a lot of talk of terrorists using dirty bombs, but this sounds like we're doing it ourselves.
Yes, that is precisely the case. And in fact, I think the people who use it know that they're doing it. Or if they didn't know at the beginning, they certainly know from all of the results that have come out from the various studies that there have been. They know now. And of course, this is part of the same argument, external and internal radiation, because what happens is uranium binds to DNA, and that's how these effects occur.
Yes. I know you have to go, so I just have one final question, and that is that many of these results that you're talking about, the harmful effects of radiation, have been known for years, and some scientists, like Ernest Sternglass, picked up on it and followed it up with other studies. But do you have any theory on how many scientists and even people in industry who know this is the case and the military can go forward using this technology, knowing that basically they're killing their own, in addition to people in other countries?
Yeah, sure. I have thought about that. In a way, it's more interesting than the science, and I've written a book about it called Wolves of Water. What I've concluded is this, because I've met a lot of these people. I've been on some very senior committees in the EU, in the England. I've met people in the United States, all over Europe, who operate on that level. And I've decided there are three types of people involved in this research. They're people who are bad guys. They're just through and through bad guys. They know that there's a problem. They don't care. They always think that there's a reason why they should do what they do. You know, it's special pleading. So we want to win the war. We don't care if we kill the children. Those guys, they're the bad guys. And then there are guys who are idiots. Most of them are idiots, I have to say. So they're people who get to the top just by being nice to people. They have social graces. They maybe know somebody. You know, there's nepotism and so on. So they get into these big committees or on these into this exalted area of political power for reasons that are unknown. But they're not very clever. There are quite a lot of those. That's most of them. So there's a few bastards. Then there's a lot of idiots. And then you have some people who are clever that I call wimps. These are people who know that there's a problem, but they can't do anything about it because they're too frightened, they're too nervous, they're just constitutionally unable to stand up and say, look, this is wrong. And there are people like that. We know from psychological experiments that lots of people are like that. They'd rather sort of keep their head down and go with the flow, although they know what they're doing is wrong. So that's how it works.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'd like to talk to you more about that, but I'll reserve that for another time. I appreciate your work, Chris. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. You've been listening to Dr. Chris Busby, who developed his knowledge in the areas of radiation biology and epidemiology and presently heads a company called Green Audit and does research in the field of low-level radiation and health. He is currently the Scientific Secretary of the European Committee on Radiation Risk. That's it today for Politics and Science. I hope you enjoyed it, and please tune in again next week for another edition of Politics and Science. This show represented the viewpoints of its participants and did not necessarily reflect an opinion of any other person or organization.